Welcome to the Horror Writers Podcast. Join Jay Thorne and Richard Brown as they discuss writing and publishing horror using strategies that work for all genres.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 13 of the Horror Writers Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Thorne, along with co-host Richard Brown. Say hello, Richard.
What happened to your lower third? Your lower third disappeared.
What happened to Jay's lower third?
Oh, well.
Is it back?
It's back now.
All right. We're just going to go with it. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, episode 13. It's and this is going out on the 13th, too, so that's kind of weird, huh?
Maybe that has something to do with it.
Isn't it lucky? Is it lucky number 13 or is it unlucky? I think it's unlucky, right?
Friday the 13th movie. It's lucky, I think.
Oh, is it? Yeah, the people in the Friday 13th movies, they were really lucky.
Yeah.
Have you seen that commercial? It's like a Geico commercial or something, and it's like kind of spoofing horror movies a bit, where there's like these three kids and they run up to this spooky house. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, there's three of them and they run up to this house and one of them's like, it's like, oh, we should get in the attic. And the other one's like, no, let's get in the basement. And then this girl's like, guys, there's a running car over there. Why don't we just go to the car? And then the other guy's like, no, let's go hide behind this wall of chainsaws.
I did see that, yeah.
You've seen it before? Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a guy like standing behind them while they're hiding. He's just like shaking his head like, this is too easy.
Yeah, because I remember because the one guy, when she's like, oh, there's a running car over there. He's like, no.
Yeah. He's like, no, we need to go hide behind the chainsaws. And then at the end, they're like running away. They're like, run for the cemetery. I wonder if it was a pet cemetery or just a regular one.
Oh, a pet cemetery.
Oh, there it is.
This would be a good time to remind everyone out there that if you want to be part of our conversation, Richard has one of the original versions. I've got the republished 2000 era cover. I'm at about page 150. Really enjoying it. We're reading it because both of us read it when we were youngsters. Yeah, you like that?
You're really showing your age already.
Well, it made a big impression on us, and so we decided that we were going to read it again. And so we're going to ask you if you want to join us, please do. We're going to be taking questions or comments. You can email them us or email them to us or put them in the comments for the show. Probably going to be 4 to 6 weeks, and we're going to dedicate a whole show to Pet Cemetery. So hopefully you guys are interested in reading that with us.
Yeah, maybe sometime in November, you think?
Yeah, probably sometime in November.
Yeah, my copy, it says the copyright 1983, but you know how these copyright pages are there. They're kind of weird. Like, they'll say like a bunch of different copyright dates. And it also says first printing November 1984. So I'm thinking that this is 1984, maybe. It's the first printing of the paperback. But they probably had the hardback came out in 1983 or something.
I don't know. It's possible. It's hard to believe it's that old. I thought it was late 80s. I didn't realize it was
This is copyright 1983.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is like maybe one of the first printing of the paperback. I mean, it's not in good shape anymore, but
yeah, that's the cover I remember when I read it. So
yeah,
I don't know.
You're 150 pages. I'm actually not even started yet, but
well, I wasn't planning on starting it yet, and I sat down. It was sitting on the couch, or it was sitting on the end table next to me, and I picked it up and just started reading the introduction. And then I look up and I'm like 150 pages in. So that's how King is for me, though. I start reading his stuff and I just get lost in it.
So I know that I remember the first maybe 50 pages or something were kind of, you know, a little intro, and it took a little time to get to the cool stuff. But you're probably starting to get into it a little bit now.
Yeah, it's definitely a slower start than I remembered and maybe what I'm used to.
I remember it having a little bit of a slow start, but once it starts building every chapter, and then it's like by the time you get to the good stuff, it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I won't give any spoilers, and I'll save the good stuff for our conversation. Yeah. But when Lewis's first day of work, when he goes to the university's medical office, and there's a trauma there. Once you hit that point.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where but there's about 50 pages maybe where it's before that, and then once you get there, it starts to get a lot better. Yes. So you might start reading it and think, well, this is going to be boring, but you got to push past the first 50. Yeah, it's always like that with King in many ways.
Yep.
You know, King's book, sorry, you always usually got to get past the first. Sometimes it's way more than 50 pages.
Yeah.
I remember that. I don't know if you ever read Insomnia.
Mm-hmm.
I never finished it. Was it actually any good?
Really? Yeah, yeah. I don't remember much of it. I read it a really long time ago.
I started reading it, and I'll quit on books if I'm not interested, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I got like 50 pages in, and I just stopped reading it. Because the whole first 50 pages was just this guy taking a walk to like an airport or something, and he was just describing everything this guy would pass by.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this is just boring. And then when I read On Writing and he said that book was plotted out really strictly and it was one of his worst books, then I was like, okay, I'm not going to bother going back to it then.
Okay.
If he doesn't even like it, you know. But I think there are some people that did like it.
I think that's the one where it's the guy that can see the different colored auras above people's heads. And it's like when I could be wrong. Maybe I'm thinking of a different King book, but there's one where the guy can kind of see people's auras, and he knows what's going to happen to him based on the color he sees.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't remember that, so that might have been Insomnia, because I didn't get very far. But he does a lot of stories that are kind of like that, you know, like the Dead Zone, where the guy can, mm-hmm. like, you know. So, yeah.
Well, this,
so what do you... Go ahead.
I was just going to add one more thing on this. This version that I have from the early 2000s has a new introduction by Stephen King. And he talks a little bit about how the story came about, and and it's really interesting. And if you don't know why he wrote the story or sort of how he got the idea, you should check it out or look it up online. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, mine doesn't have an introduction. That's the only bad thing, because it was the first version.
Yeah.
So I would like to read that actually. I'll have to try to find that.
Yeah,
maybe I might be able to just download the sample from on the Kindle and just read it there.
Yeah, probably.
Because it's probably right at the beginning, right? So,
it's one of those things that it's not autobiographical, but it's one of the great things King can do. He takes like a really simple scenario, and just puts a twist on it. Like, mm-hmm. you know, there's not much to the story, and he talks about how he came up with the idea, and I think that's a lot harder to do than it sounds.
Oh yeah, it's definitely. You know, most people usually try to think of a really complicated idea, but he takes something, like you said, really small and can make it something interesting, where a lot of us would, if we had a really small idea, it would just seem really boring or whatever. Like, you know, a Jay Thorne book, maybe.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
But I remember there was a lot of, that with that book, there was some kind of, he was a new publisher or something he went with, and so there were some issues with it, and... He had some problems with, I think, the publisher at the time. And,
oh, okay.
And that's why I think it ended up taking so long to even get on Kindle, because he just had so many problems with it. But
interesting.
I don't know the whole story. I just remember hearing that.
Yeah.
Might have been in his... I don't know if you ever saw his old, like, remember A&E or whatever? They used to have the biography. Was it A&E?
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, and they used to have those bios, and I remember watching his. It was really cool.
Yep. Yeah.
All right, so episode 13.
13.
We've already done how many, like five together, and then you did those, you know, by yourself still. So last episode was pretty fun, huh?
Yeah, last episode, Rebecca T. Dixon, my editor, was on, and there was some ass kicking.
Yeah. We went off the rails a little bit, but it was fun.
But yeah, it's okay. I think that's... For me, that's part of the fun of doing this, is not having a scripted out interview and sort of having exactly what we're going to say. I sort of like the spontaneous vibe of it. So I'm cool with it.
Yeah, I was thinking about not wearing my glasses just, you know, for her. But but then I was like, you know, it's for the show. You know, I got to...
It's your thing, man. You got to take one for the team and wear them for the show, no matter what anyone says.
I was just weird. I didn't know if she wanted to, like, I don't know if she wanted to look in my eyes or whatever, but.
Well, you do have dreamy eyes.
Yeah.
So.
That's why I didn't want, I figured if I took them off during the show, then she would just be drawn to them. And.
Yeah. I mean, it was for her own protection.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there was a moment where, I mean, we got into talking about point of view where I think none of us knew what we were talking about. I was like
something slightly different.
I was talking about like third person limited, and I was thinking like first person in my head or something. So I was all screwed up with that. And then like you were like talking like that you wrote, what is it, third person omniscient or something?
Yeah.
And you don't, I don't think. Because that's actually where you head hop. I actually went and looked them all up and everything. That's where you just head hop, and the narrator knows everything about every character, and they can just share their feelings whenever.
Yeah.
Right? And like paragraph to paragraph, they could talk about one character's feelings, and then the next paragraph they say something about another character's. Where most people don't write like that. And then, but you thought you did. Because we were all like all messed up, but it was fun.
It's good. It's good. We're all right. So let's before we get into today's topic about pen names and genre hopping. So if you're tuning in now, that's kind of where we're going to go. But before we do that, we've had a few shows with guests on, and we haven't kind of updated ourselves on what's going on. So what's up with you these days, Richard?
Well, actually, kind of inspired by the podcast with Joe Hart. I mentioned it, I think, in a previous show, might have been even the last show on the editing, that my first book that I published was called The Gift of Illusion, and it was a kind of a dark thriller, you know? Mm-hmm. Like the main character was a detective. It was like a supernatural detective story. And it had a lot of problems. I mean, it was I wrote it like 15 years ago, so when I threw it up on Amazon, I did it just kind of as a test, you know? Mm-hmm. I didn't know if this indie publishing thing was for real, and I didn't want to spend the time to write a new book and then self-publish it and then go, oh, that was a big mistake. You know, I should have saved that for traditional publishing or something. Because you know, mm-hmm. the stigma was always you don't want to self-publish. And
right.
And once you self-publish, you can't get it traditionally published, you know.
Right.
That was what you were always told, that if you self-publish, forget about it, you're done then. You know, and that can even hurt your chances of getting a future book published if you self-published.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you remember all this, you know, back in 2010, 2011, that was the vibe. And so you had to be, everybody was kind of careful about it, but.
Right.
So I threw that old book up there and you know, it didn't do that well. I did all the blog touring and all the stuff that they told you to do back then. And I gave away a lot of free books. And the reviews were very middle of the road, you know, 3 stars. Mm-hmm. I think if it's still listed, I unpublished it, but you can't get the paperback version off.
Right.
Which is frustrating, you know, because Amazon they'll keep it. I don't know if you know that, but yeah, they'll keep it up there forever as long as somebody could sell a used copy.
Right. Yeah. You have to live with that the rest of your life.
Yeah. That will be there forever now. Yep. Like, so that's frustrating, but it's still there. And the only nice thing about it being there was I could still go look at the reviews. And the reviews were, like, my highest. I had 5 stars, but I mean, the most reviews were 3 stars. Mm-hmm. And you know that there's probably something wrong if the majority of reviews that are coming in are 3 stars.
Right.
At least how I feel. I don't feel proud of that. And the worst part about it too was that I agreed with them. Right.
Yeah.
If I get a 1 star on Dead Highways or something, usually it's just, oh, they just weren't into it. Right.
Right.
They just didn't like the style or whatever. And so what? You know, or it's something like, oh, it's too gory or too much foul language, you know. And that's just like, I'm okay with that. Fine, you don't like foul language.
Yeah.
But with that one, I mean, people would go kind of into detail as to what was wrong with it. Mm-hmm. And they were right. It had a lot of problems with the story and even the editing and stuff like that. So I rightfully took it down a year ago because I didn't want people reading that.
Yeah.
And my thought was always that I would go back sometime and revise it and do something different with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the last year kind of went by and I really never thought about it. And I think if you had asked me a month ago, I would have said that I wouldn't have done anything with it, right? That it would have probably just sit there forever, and I'll never revise it, because it's kind of a time thing. Like, is it worth revising it?
Right.
Rather than writing something new. But then we had the show with Joe, and it's not just because his books are selling well, because I have no idea if revising this one, it will make it sell well, but I think just his story involved sort of a detective that was kind of like mine, and mm-hmm. and hearing and seeing his books doing well, you know, kind of inspired me to at least take a look at that book again. And I haven't looked at it since I unpublished it. So I just started looking at it, and one night I was like, let me just see if I can think of a new way to change this thing. Mm-hmm. So I started, you know, kind of jotting down brainstorming ideas, and I went through all those reviews on Amazon. And I took notes, right? Which this is probably a good thing to do for anybody mm-hmm. on any book, even if you think the book's good, you know, pay attention to what people say if they say something that you think is useful. Because you can always go change your book.
Sure.
You know, make small little changes to it and stuff.
Or big changes.
Yeah, I mean, if it's big, I would probably say maybe take it down. And then, like, if you're going to change the whole story, but yeah. if it's small little things or whatever, you definitely just go in and make changes and... You shouldn't be afraid to do that. But yeah, I went through the Goodreads too. I made a bunch of notes, and particularly of things that came up a lot of times, you know, where people mm-hmm. would say the same thing. In the book, there's this prologue where it's not really giving anything away because it's the prologue, but the detective's wife gets murdered, right? And in the book, the original, it didn't have anything to do with what followed, right? Oh. It was like 16 years later is when the first chapter comes in. And the whole right point of that was I was going to establish him as being kind of damaged and having this regret for having kind of felt like he let his wife die.
Yeah.
And that's why I did that. But people complained because they were like, wow, I had this really good beginning. If you read that prologue, it's like the prologue I think is awesome. It's really suspenseful. It's really exciting. It's like 10 pages of like you're gripping the book. And then all of a sudden it goes to 16 years later where that prologue didn't really have anything to do with the case he's now doing. And a lot of people complained about that. So I'm like, that's something I definitely need to fix. And there was a bunch of things. So anyway, to not drag on forever, I feel like I'm dragging on forever here. You're not saying anything. You got something
you're
to just, say?
You're going way out there, and I'm letting you go, man. But it's all right. Go ahead.
All right. We got a nice That's laugh cool. out of you. That's a it's creepy cool. laugh.
That's cool. Go ahead.
So, oh, man, my mouth is getting dry. Hold on. I've been talking for so long. So I started, you know, I wrote all this stuff down, and I started looking at it, and then I didn't even plan it out. I just opened it up, and I started actually using Scrivener again, which has been actually a big help because you can separate it into like chapters.
Right.
So instead of looking at it as like one big document, you know, like mm-hmm. Word, you can see all the little chapters. You kind of flip through really fast, and I decided I would make it into like the chapters shorter, so they would be like quicker and faster paced. Because mm-hmm. as a thriller, I think that's important. And I just kind of started reading through them, and I started adding the little things that would work with my new plot. And as I did, I just started coming up with more and more ideas. And I've gotten like 10 chapters in now, and I think it's going really well. But basically now I've reached the point where the book, when I first finished it 15 years ago, it was like 110,000 words, right? And then I cut like 20 or 30,000 out of it, right? Just right off the bat, like, because you know how it is with the... It was one of my first novels, so I kind of just wrote myself into all kinds of corners and stuff.
Right.
So I ended up having to cut so much stuff out just to make it readable back then, right? And it still wasn't great. And then, so it was like 80,000 or something. You know what it is right now? It's 40,000.
Wow.
So, but it's not done.
Mm-hmm.
But that means I'm basically going to have to add in another 20 or 30 probably before it's finished. Because I've reached a point now where in the first maybe 10 chapters, I could still kind of follow the storyline as it was. I didn't have to change too much. It was kind of adding some things, maybe rewriting the chapter a little bit. Because I've changed, like, the villain completely. It's like a different villain, right? Which changes the story fundamentally.
Yeah.
And so, but now I've reached this point where now I can, because I've changed so many things, I've gotten to chapter 10. Basically, the ending's going to be very different and completely different almost. So now I have to, it's going to take a lot of writing, but I'm really kind of excited about it because I think that it's going to be so much better. And then I'm fixing all those problems people said.
Yeah.
And I'm just planning on, like, rebranding it, and it'll go into our topic a little bit because, you know, I'm kind of do a complete rebrand and stuff on it.
Yeah, cool.
So that's it. I'm sure I'll mention a little bit more as we go. But
inspired by Joe Hart.
Joe Hart, man. He's an inspiring guy, I think. I don't know what you thought about him, but
he's a good guy. Yeah, I enjoyed our conversation. We're gonna have him back on to talk Pet Sematary.
Yeah, so if he's listening to this show, you better start reading it soon. Because it's the 13th of October.
That's right, Joe. No slacking.
Yeah. So what's new with you?
I put out my first middle grade horror story this week, which was a lot of fun. And it'll also kind of get into our topic of the week, so I'll save some of that for later. But it was really cool. It was really nice to hear from some of my readers in a way, in a different way, you know, like they posted some reviews and sent me some emails about it, and it was really nice to hear that they appreciated a story for the kids. And, you know, clearly it's not a Jay Thorne horror story as some of my other stuff, but it's just a short, you know, 20,000 word goosebump style middle grade fiction, and but I worked really hard at it, and I wanted it to be more than just a template, you know, more than just sort of a boiler for kids, and so it's been fun, it's been good, it's out there. I have some repubs in the pipeline that aren't quite ready for publication yet, but they're also going to be chapter book middle grade type of stuff, and which is kind of part of what we're talking about tonight, because these other titles that I have were with a different pen name. And when I first started writing these, and I started writing them for my own children, that's why I started doing this. I was told by a number of writers, like, you can't put your name on that for various reasons. So I think we're going to get into that, and I'll talk a little bit about it. But the book is doing well, and you know,
it's called
The Monroeville Monster, Don't Go Into the Woods. And it's kind of based loosely on my experience as a kid in Monroeville, Pennsylvania. And growing up, I grew up, you know, with video games, but beginning of the video game era, and most of my time was spent playing in the woods and making up stories and making up monsters and all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of what inspired it, and that's what it's about.
You were in the Blair Witch Project, weren't you?
I was the witch. In that,
we never even saw you, did we?
Right, exactly. You didn't see me. That's how good of a witch I was. You didn't even see me.
How much did you get paid for that? I imagine it was substantial.
It was nothing at the time. No,
really,
it was 94. Yeah, yeah. I didn't think that movie was going to go anywhere, and then look what happened. Yeah. For the record, I was not in that movie. In case you can't tell,
do you remember at the time? It was. I remember when I was in high school or something in the 90s, and like, I remember people were like, legitimately thought it was real.
Well, yeah, and they thought it was real because Sanchez was brilliant. He was one of the first guys that used the faux website before people figured out it wasn't a real website. So he had the Blair Witch Project website all built out, and that was in like 93 or 94. And so
it was just text.
Yeah, well, I mean, there were some graphics, but it was at a time where people weren't even thinking about using the website for a fake anything, and so you have the movie hitting at this, a found footage film hitting at the same time as this website's up, and it was like the perfect storm, and it took months before people figured out that was a feature film and not found footage.
Well, were there found footage movies before that?
There's some debate. I'm not a hardcore found footage guy, but there's a whole community around that, there was like a movie about aliens, and I don't remember the name of it. I'm sure someone can find it. There was a movie about alien invasion that was found footage that I think predated Blair Witch. But Blair Witch was the first one that made it into like the Hollywood scene and made it into movie theaters and made such an impact.
It was the first one that, like, kind of, yeah, people really, it actually did well.
Yes, yes.
Did you ever see that movie, I think it's called The Troll Hunter or something? Troll Hunters?
No, I haven't seen that.
You should watch that one, it's funny. I think it's like a Swedish movie or something. So there's like subtitles, but it's actually like, it's kind of like that, like they're going hunting for trolls and in the woods and stuff, and it's like, it's a little shaky cam, but it's actually really well done. I was surprised. Huh. The trolls, cool. Like they look good.
Yeah,
they look scary. And there's one at the end where there's like it's kind of an open. I think it's like snow and stuff. And there's like this giant like snow troll, and it's like really cool.
That's it. Now I'm gonna have to check it out.
Yeah, you should definitely check it out.
I know Sanchez has got a new movie either coming out or ready to come out called Exists, and it's found footage Bigfoot. It looks really cool. It looks really cool. He was shooting it in Texas a few months ago, and I've been seeing his posts on Facebook about it. So I'm gonna have to check that out too.
Yeah, definitely. Before we do, I mean, I think we're probably planning on getting back to the modern horror films back in maybe November.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe before that, you can find that Troll Hunters movie and check it out, because I thought it was good.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So you want to move on with the topic?
Yeah. You want to? Do you want to talk a little bit about sort of why we're talking about it, or the general sense? We just kind of want to open it up and start sharing our thoughts on pen names and genre hopping.
Yeah, go ahead and start.
Okay. Well, I was saying before.
It's always funny when we had to first get into the topic, because it's always like, where do you start at, you know? But once you start talking, well, then it's easy.
All right. Well, I'll give you my perspective on it, and pen names and genre hopping aren't mutually exclusive. In fact, they're definitely related. It's an easy way to genre hop is to use a pen name. And what I think I've discovered, and I've written with multiple pen names in different genres, and it's really, really hard to do that. What I've discovered is it's hard enough sort of feeding one author platform. Feeding more than one author platform is really a lot of work. It's almost like you think of it like you're an agent for two writers, but you're one person. So what I ended up doing is I took a pen name for my children's books. I've been writing books for my kids since they were old enough to read. And as I was writing them, and as I was building out my J. Thorne brand, my kids kept telling me, like, "Hey, you know what, Dad? You got to put those up. You got to make those available." So I decided, on the advice of
some
other.
So they weren't previously available.
Well, they were under a different pen name, and I'm not going to mention it now because it'll be too confusing, and the books are in transition. But I was told by some of the authors who I was working with at the time. This would have been 2 or 3 years ago. They said, "You can't put a kid's book up under your name. That's just a bad move." And I didn't know any better, and I didn't, why wouldn't I not listen to them? So I said, okay, so I used a different pen name, and those books never sold squat because I wasn't promoting them. They weren't tied to my brand. They didn't have my name on them, and they didn't sell anything. So that's part of what I'm doing now is the Minerva Monster is the first kid's book I'm writing with my name on it, but these other four or five titles, these chapter books I wrote, I'm having them re-edited, I'm having all the covers redone, and then I'm going to republish them under my name. And so I don't have a lot of experience genre hopping. Like, I'm not writing romance, I'm not writing stuff really far away from horror and dark fantasy, but even with kids' books with a different pen name, it was really hard. And I'd love to hear feedback from authors out there who are using multiple pen names or writing across genres, and I'd love to hear their story, because I just found it was extremely difficult to sell.
Yeah, I expected you would be on the side of just use your own name for everything, maybe. But I know a lot of, I'm kind of somewhere in the middle, I think. And a lot of authors, basically, they feel like every time you write a new series or something, it has to be a new name, which is kind of weird and like to me. But and then, like you said, you wrote the children's book, and then one of the reasons why I thought about it was because I saw you came out with a children's book under J. Thorne, and it is like kind of a scary story book, right?
It is, yeah.
But
it's
I mean,
gory.
For children, yeah.
Right, yeah.
So it's sort of, you know, it definitely, if you wrote a story about, you know, Herman the Hippo or something, and it was mm-hmm. not a scare, would you still publish it as Jay Thorne, you think?
Well, that's an interesting question. So this other series that I'm republishing.
It's Herman the Hippo.
Goosebumps?
Right?
No, it's not Herman the Hippo. It's
you stole
Harry
my
the,
idea.
Harry the Hippo.
Harry no. Potter?
There are.
You might get sued if it's Harry Potter.
No, it's not Harry Potter.
Okay.
There, it's a story about a brother and sister cardinal, and so it's sort of
cardinal.
Yeah, like birds. You know, it's.
Oh,
it's
I was thinking like.
Not baseball
like the
players.
Catholic. Yeah.
worse yet, the Catholics. No, no.
Yeah. I was like, that. There's a reason why that didn't sell, Jay. I mean, I don't think republishing it's going to help.
But these books are like adventure stories, but they've kind of got an element of scariness to them. So that's probably pushing the edge a little bit. And I don't know exactly how it's going to do, but the way I figure is it can't do any worse with Jay Thorne name on it than this other pen name. So I'm going to try and see what happens.
Well, I think the argument is, you know, that people are going to see that, and then they're going to look at your other books, right? Mm-hmm. And they're going to go, oh, this guy, he's writing this really dark horror stuff. That's kind of odd, you know? And it might make them less likely to want to buy it. Or the dark horror people who like your stuff, you're going to be sending them these children's books and stuff through your mailing list, and they're just going to get, oh, well, this guy's not doing what I like anymore, and then they're going to unsubscribe, or... They're just going to lose interest in you because you're not feeding them what they came for.
Right, right. Like that's yeah, I'm very aware of that, and I'm not writing one at the expense of the other. So, Scott Nicholson has children's books out, and he's got his name on it, and
Scott's one of those authors that definitely seems like every book. I don't know if he has pen names, but I would be surprised if he did because it seems like yeah. like he's willing to put his name on whatever he writes, and I wish that's the way it could be. I wish I could just write anything and just put Richard Brown on it. But I'm not so sure that that's the way to do it in terms of branding and selling books. So I got to think of it like for the business side too. And that's kind of what I'm trying to figure out in this show, hopefully.
Well, I think it depends though. Like in my case, if I'm a horror writer and I'm writing Goosebumps style children's books, I think that's kind of acceptable maybe in a way. I think. It wouldn't surprise anyone. Let's just put it that way. Now, if I were going to start writing like erotica under Jay Thorne, like that would be really kind of weird, you know? Like I think that'd be. So I think it depends on what you're doing. Like here's another example. So I'm currently co-writing. We just started, so I can't mention it yet. But I just started co-writing something with another writer, and it's going to be. It's going to be an epic fantasy, but it's with a horror angle to it. It's not horror. It's not epic fantasy.
Do I know this person?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. But like, I think it's still me. And like, even the Black Fang Betrayal, you know, that project, my name is on it, and I organized that. But it's not horror. It's more like an occult thriller. But still,
well, but
I think
a lot of your stuff is kind of occult, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's my whole point. Like, I'm not genre hopping way out.
Right,
like
but
I'm kind of in the same groove.
But did you consider? I mean, like with the children's book, that it's not so much that even that you'll turn people off who like your horror stuff. It's that if a kid reads that and then they go, "Oh, well, I really like this book. Let's see what else Jay Thorne's written," and they go see Preda's Realm or something.
Yeah.
You know, what are they, are you worried that they're going to, you know, immediately now be turned off by that and that they're going to read something that could be really, really horrifying to a kid?
Yeah, I can't control that. I mean, that's really a parental call. I know, you know, with my own kids, my kids are 9 and 11 and they don't buy and read their own books unsupervised. Like I wouldn't do that. And I've made it such that my picture and sort of my catalog, like the back matter for the Monrovia Monster doesn't mention any Jay Thorne books. In fact, the only thing that's back there is a link to the MonroviaMonster.com, which is just a single landing page with a cover on it. And I'll build that out as I grow the series. But it, Like, there's no direct link. Like, hey, if you like Novel Monster, you're going to love Predator's Realm. You know, that'd be kind of weird, you know?
Do you think that maybe even, like, parents, like, who might go be interested in buying it would look at your other books and go, well, maybe I won't, because this might be... Even if it says it's for kids, you know, this guy is writing some pretty occult stuff.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that. And if that's the decision they make as a parent, I'm totally cool with it.
I mean, right now, I'd be really interested to have you read the first page of Predator's Realm, actually.
You would?
If you could do that, yeah.
Why would you want me to do that?
Because I'm staring at it right now. It's pretty good. You know what it is because you wrote it.
Yeah, right? Vaguely. I wrote it a few years ago.
Drew slid his mouse across the desk with a flick of the wrist. Morning, came that call from the hallway as Ryan floated past on his way to the restroom. Hey, replied Drew. Got the best blowjob last night. Who'd you pay to touch that diseased pole of yours? Your mom. I mean, you get my idea. Like, it's
yeah,
like,
open it with it a, starts with your mother
open
joke.
With a, your mom like yeah. sexual joke. Like, yeah. What if some kid like reads the Monroeville Monster and they're like, oh, that was, you know, really great. Let me go check out this one, you know? I mean, yeah, did that at least go through your head, like, when you...
Yeah, it did, but I'm not worried about it. Like, that's, yeah. You know, it's not easy.
I mean, kids need to learn about sex sometime, right? So...
And who better to teach them than me?
Who better to teach them than some, like, middle-aged metalhead? Some weird guy on the internet.
Mommy, this creepy guy is going to teach me about sex.
Was there any sex in the Monroeville Monster?
No, there's not. You sick bastard.
Hey, you never know. My kids start the early these days.
No, you know, in all seriousness, like, my thinking is the parents are going to be buying most of these electronic books for kids on their devices. And so for that reason, I'm not worried about it. And, you know, it could happen. It might happen. I'm just not worried about it. I'm very clear on what my stuff is. I have a disclaimer on the product description of every page of every book that has something explicit or gory in it. And I know we're still talking about kids, and yeah, that could certainly happen, but have a kid open up a Google browser and type a few words and tell me what they're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, there's just no way of stopping that.
No, I mean, you definitely have it, you know, properly listed on your product description. Your product descriptions are always crazy. There's just so much going on. Like, I know you did a show early on. We might have to do another show just so it can be an intervention on you. It's just like, hey, you're going to have the longest product description in the history of product descriptions.
It's sales copy, man. It's sales copy.
Yeah. Hey, kids, are you ready for a frightening adventure? In, like, the biggest, boldest text.
Yep. Yeah, it's all intentional, man. It's not an accident. There's some science behind that.
Is there?
Oh, yeah.
You know that it works?
Yeah, I got. There's some science on product description and sales copy.
I think we're going to have a show about that sometime.
You can have one, then.
Have the intervention on you. Hey, I'll do the show by myself and just talk about... We're going to go through Jay's product descriptions, and I'm going to tell you everything that's wrong with him. All right, we're getting off topic, so...
No, you're getting off topic.
Am I?
I'm still here. I'm still right on topic. All right,
well, go ahead. Keep going. All right, so, like you brought up erotica. So, let's say you weren't making much money, and you were, I'll write a few erotic... You know, erotica is supposed to sell well. At least that's the general idea here. I've never written any, but let's say you were going to write some just to try to make some money. I mean, you wouldn't release it as Jay Thorne, right?
Well, I wouldn't release it as Jay Thorne, not because I was worried about having Jay Thorne's name on it.
What would be your reasoning for this? Kind of gets into it then. What would be your reasoning? Why do you think people should or shouldn't use a pen name, maybe?
Well, okay, well, erotica is a different example, because I think erotica... I think it kind of creeps readers out if erotica is written by a man, first of all.
Maybe.
So that would be one reason why I wouldn't write erotica with Jay Thorne's name on it. But if the genre is somewhat compatible or somewhat derivative of something bigger, then I don't have an issue with it. So in my example, like, if it's, you know, dark fantasy and horror, post-apocalyptic, Like, if I write that stuff and then I have an occasional epic fantasy that has a horror slant to it, like, I just don't think that's a big leap. And there might be some readers that feel like, oh, that's not what I want. That's fine. They don't have to read it. But erotica, like, doing that and then going to erotica, that's a big jump. That's kind of where I unofficially draw the line. And I know it's a blurry gray line, but that's kind of... If the genres aren't, like, compatible, that's when I would change the pen name.
Yeah, when I was thinking about the topic, I thought maybe you could add to it. I don't know. But I came up with maybe three reasons why somebody would want to use a pen name. One, kind of right out of the gate, maybe they have a weird name or something. And,
well,
you know.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. All right.
Like, it might be spelled funny or mm-hmm. really long or something. So you want to pick something that's better, more simple, or, you know... So, you know, just easier to remember.
Sure. Like Richard Brown.
Yeah, well, that's actually my real name, I'm telling you. I didn't have to go pen name like you.
Yeah, no one would pick a pen name Richard Brown. I believe that's your real name.
Why would nobody pick that?
What do you mean, why would no one pick that?
Why would nobody want that name as their pen name? I feel offended.
You should. You should be offended.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with it.
You think it's bad, apparently.
It's standard. Like, it's not.
But that's good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, like, people, you want to have a standard name, I think.
You want something that's easy to remember.
Yeah, and it is easy to remember. Yeah. And now if I had saw that there was a million Richard Browns writing fiction, then I probably wouldn't have used it. Because yeah. I would want to, like, if my name was Dan Brown, yeah, I would have switched to my first name. Because I don't want to be...
No, you should keep it.
Really? Yeah. Well, maybe, yeah, because if they're searching Dan Brown, right? But for me, I kind of want to be known as my own author. I don't want to just write off of his... You know, the kind of the Joe Hill thing. You know, he could have been Joe King. And but you know, he changes it just because he wants to kind of be his own author. Even if everybody knows that he's, you know, King's son. But
yeah.
But that's kind of at the beginning. You know, you pick the name.
Yeah.
We're talking more like, okay, let's say you're writing in one genre and you want to switch genres.
Yes.
And you want to do something different. Why should you do it? I think one reason might be because, like you said with the erotica thing, where you don't, maybe you're kind of ashamed of what you wrote. Maybe you're going to write some erotica stories just to make some money and you don't want them connected to you, mm-hmm. right? Because either you're ashamed of it or because you think that the readers are there's going to be this huge disconnect. And I think even maybe with just standard romance, romance is kind of its own thing, I think. And I don't think there's a whole lot of crossover to many other genres. So I think if I was going to, at least for me personally, if I was going to write a romance book, I would do it under a pen name. And I wouldn't tell anybody that it's Richard Brown, right? And if I was writing romance and I wanted to write horror, I would do the same thing, mm-hmm. right? I would do it under another name and I wouldn't connect the two. But then there's writing under a pen name but still connecting it to your other name. That's where things get a little interesting, like kind of the J.A. Conrath approach. He has his I think it's Jack Kilbourne.
Kilbourne, yeah.
Which he does his horror stuff. But he still connects it to Conrath. He still makes, you know, I don't know if he always did it, but he does it now. Yeah. And that way people can distinguish, okay, this is a Conrath book, it's probably a thriller. If it's a Kilbourne book, then it's probably a horror, right? So even if it's to his same audience, they kind of know what they're getting then.
Yeah,
because he uses a slightly different name or whatever,
right?
How do you?
Which I wonder if that was deliberate or not.
Yeah,
or if that just evolved that way.
I don't know. I'm kind of guessing maybe say that he originally didn't do it deliberately, but he just figured that mm-hmm. he would connect them eventually. But I've seen other authors who do that, where they'll just use a different name, but they'll still connect it to the other one so that you'll know because they're not ashamed of what they wrote.
Right.
Right. And it's not really horror and thrillers are, you know, have a lot of crossover too.
Yeah.
So this kind of, you know, with my thriller that I'm rebranding, I'm planning on changing the name, completely different name. And so I won't be like republishing it as the same book or anything. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a different book. I think I'm going to have to write in this description that it was previously published as the old book just in case somebody. Right. Even though kind of the story's fundamentally really changed, there's still some of the scenes are the same and the characters are kind of the same. So you know, I don't know that I would want to take a chance that somebody would rebuy the same, you know, a book that they would think is the same in many ways. But I do want to completely rebrand it, and I'm considering using a different name. Mm-hmm. But I would still connect it. Like, I don't want to like use a different name and then not be able to tell my list.
Right.
So I want to be able to have the benefit of being able to tell my list about it, but still maybe brand it as like, here's my thriller line kind of thing. So one, I've just been, you know, my name's Richard Brown. I've considered maybe Rich Brown or something like that, or,
yeah,
you know, it's just a little shorter. It'll be a little bigger on the cover. So if maybe for branding a thriller, I kind of just see that as being a better thing, having a little shorter name.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Yeah,
if you're going to, why would you want to use your name to brand it? Would the title and the cover art and the series title not be enough to brand it? Like, what's the advantage to adding a different name in addition to all that?
I don't know. That's what I'm trying to figure out. I don't know if it's a great idea or not, but because Richard Brown, I definitely don't want Richard Brown just to be this zombie guy, you know?
Right.
I want him, because I don't call myself a horror writer. I don't call myself a post-apocalyptic writer. I'm a writer.
Yeah.
Right? If you were to look through my list of things I want to write, there's fantasy, sci-fi, you know, all kinds of stuff. That I even have one that's kind of a young adult fantasy. I mean, and I don't know if I should just publish them all. I'd love to just be able to say I could publish them all as Richard Brown and just, that's it. But I understand the other argument that people make, that using a different name sort of separates them so that it actually doesn't get people a little confused by it. And I'm kind of stuck in the middle. I'm not really sure whether I should do it with certain books versus other books. So I'm looking at my catalog of stuff I want to write in the next few years and going, okay, what's going to be a Richard Brown book? What should maybe I do these thrillers under Rich Brown, but still have them on my website and just so people know, okay, Rich Brown is doing the thrillers. But like you said, maybe if I completely brand them a different way, then I don't know. By the covers and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you could do it successfully either way. It seems like it's really easy to get confused these days on Amazon. I want to make the reader experience as simple as I possibly can, and I would be concerned that if after five books you're writing under five slightly different names, that in itself could be confusing. So like if you go Rich Brown for thrillers and then you decide to write an epic fantasy, are you gonna write that under Rich Brown, or that you would you then change that to like R Brown? You know, like, and then you have like four or five different names. Like,
no, I know some
that
authors.
That seems kind of confusing.
I know some authors that have a just like every. It seems like every time they write a book, they want to write under a new pen name, and it's like you said. I mean, what do you have to create a new website for all of them, and do you have to have a new Twitter? It becomes like so much like work that I don't want to have to do all that. So I probably wouldn't want to have more than three or four would be tops. And most of them I would want just connected to my other one. Like if I did write romance, I would have to come up with a new name and probably totally new branding thing, you know, like a new website or whatever. But I wouldn't do that with my thriller. And I think if I wrote fantasy and I wrote it under R. Brown or something, that I could still connect that, because fantasy and thrillers and sci-fi, you know, they connect a lot to horror.
Right.
I think they share a lot of the same readers. So like you said, it's not a huge jump.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, maybe because it's not a huge jump, maybe I should just stick Richard Brown on there. I don't know. I'm kind of torn, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if I – I mean, I can
I really... knew you were going to be very much on the side, I think, of – or at least I figured you would be, of just throwing Jay Thorne on there no matter what. But is that how you feel? Or at least with erotica and stuff, you would
– No, I think that's how I feel now, just because, like, I've experienced trying to sell – books. Now, granted, this was not connected in the way you mentioned it, so it was a completely different pen name with no connection to Jay Thorne whatsoever.
Now with your children's book, could you have not released it as James Thorne and then sort of just connected it and slightly, you know?
I guess.
And do you think that would have been at least a little better? Maybe it would have. I don't know.
I don't think it's too hard to connect the dots, really. Like.
No. But at least people know James Thorne is the guy that writes the children's books. Jay Thorne is the guy that writes the scenes with your mama jokes.
Yeah, but if you're looking at my covers and you can't tell the difference between the horror book and the kids book, like...
Well, I mean, I don't know.
Really?
But a kid might look at it and go, "Oh, this looks like another spooky tale." Right?
Yeah, I'm not in the job of
I know
parenting
my
other people's
daughter, and
kids,
my
so I'm
daughter
not
ha
worried about
I have
it.
a da I have a daughter, and she has an iPad and all that stuff, and I'm sure she could go find her own book. She doesn't need to have mom do it, you know. But I don't know. I just that was what was interesting. I didn't know if you had really thought about that when you released it, and with me doing my thriller now, I'm kind of stuck on whether I should just because I think part of it too is that because it's this old book, I kind of want to just totally redo it. I honestly considered at first just using a whole nother different name and not connecting it to me at all. But then I
Yeah.
thought, well, if I have to put it in the description that it was previously published as this other book, and then they can make the connection anyway because they can always just go search for The Gift of Illusion and they're going to find me,
Right.
right? Because it's still on Amazon. Now, if it wasn't on Amazon, well, maybe then I could, you know, get away with that. But
Right.
so I did consider doing that, but then I thought, well, I lose the advantage of being able to tell my list and stuff. And it is still a supernatural thriller, so it does have some horror elements and stuff to it.
Yeah. Now there's just the logistics too that's even if there's even if it's a different name but it's still connected, you're probably going to want to have at least a landing page for that particular pen name, and you're going to have maybe a different Author Central account for that pen name, and you just start to like you start to ratchet up all of those little odds
Well, I
and
know
ends and those
Conrath. I
details.
went and looked, and he didn't have another author page for Kilborn, I don't think. He just still has it under a JA. Actually, his
Yeah.
books that are under JA, I mean, his Kilborn books, I went and looked up, and most of them had Conrath listed as an author, too.
Right.
So he really wants to
Yeah.
connect the two because he
Right.
listed both of them. I mean, obviously, J.A. Conrath and Jack Kilborn are the same person, but he has them both listed as the author.
Yeah. Yeah, he's probably an outlier in that sense. I think most authors who use multiple pen names
They use
probably
something
have a
totally
different.
different, right?
Yeah, they probably have a at the very least they have a landing page or a book page for each pen name.
Which I don't really want to go the direction where I come up with a totally different name and then do that. But I guess I could kind of see the advantage in going as R. Brown for fantasy, but still connecting it to Richard. That way, when I release something, if anybody who does like my stuff, they'll be the R. Brown people or the people who want the fantasy, and then the Richard Brown, you know, maybe they want the post-apocalyptic or
Yeah.
The horror stuff, but
Well, I but there's a, there's sort of a, another there's another idea here that I think we've kind of touched upon that I'd like to ask you about. Like back in the day when you had to go into a bookstore and you had to walk into a particular section to get a book, genres kind of mattered, right? And what the cover looked like and what was on the spine and all that sort of stuff mattered. I'm wondering if it's different now. Like are readers more open to writers who write in different genres because they read different genres and they're not going into a store looking for it, like they're seeking you out as opposed to like browsing. What do you think about that?
Right, I know at least for me personally, when I used to go into bookstores, I mean, usually it was because I knew what I wanted, right? Or I knew what author I wanted to read, and so I would just go look for their books. You know, I would go to the if I wanted to read Stephen King, I would go to the horror section and look for the K's, right?
Right.
And so I would not even notice most of the other authors there. I might see a new book that maybe is sitting on the table or whatever, where it's cover out, and maybe it interests me because of the cover. But usually, if it's spine, I didn't pull like random books off the shelf. So I
Yeah.
see what you're saying, like, and with this. I look at the reviews, you know. I look at my Dead Highways reviews, and I look at what other books these people have read, and yeah, they read across a lot of different genres. So that's why I've always felt like I should be able to write whatever I want. And if they don't like this book, fine, they don't have to read this one. If I send it to my mailing list and it's a fantasy story and they're not into fantasy, well then okay. I am concerned that maybe they'll think, oh, he's writing fantasy now, and they'll unsubscribe or something, which I don't want, but. I don't know if you just got to be super clear with people, and you just got to get enough books out all the time that you constantly, because you're still kind of cultivating these different tribes of people in a way. I know, like Sean and Johnny from the self-publishing podcast, they're very much about doing all kinds of different genres and releasing them as their names. Whereas Sean and Dave, they mostly do the darker stuff.
Well, yeah, and they have different imprints, but now they've consolidated all of that under Sterling and Stone, and they also use their same name on everything.
Yeah.
So.
Well, he did. They didn't. Shonda, I think he has a children's that he did do under another name.
Yeah, that's Guy Incognito.
That's kind of like the Conrath approach, right? Because I think it's still connected to Sterling and Stone, I believe.
Yeah, it's under that umbrella somewhere.
It's still under the umbrella, but it's like he has it as a different name because he said he doesn't want people looking up Sean Platt and finding his horror stuff.
Right.
So that's kind of a little different than like the approach you're taking there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, there's a few different approaches that it's like, and I hear a lot of people, you know, they on the on forums and stuff, they ask about pen names and when is a good time to use one and when is not. I think you use one if you don't want anybody knowing it's you. I think with erotica, I might be stereotyping here, but I think it's true. I think a lot of people, they don't want their family and friends to know they wrote these books.
Right.
You know? So they write it under a pen name for that reason.
Sure.
And there is a bit of a, I don't know if you'd say they're ashamed of it, but if you're not willing to stick your name on it, I kind of feel you probably are ashamed of it a little bit. Or at least not willing to tell people that you wrote it, right? Because, you know, you don't think it's anything great. But for me, if I write a book, that I don't intend to write stuff like that. I just want to write things that I'm really proud of. So should I just, I feel like a pride, like I want to put my name on it. But at the same time, you know, people present these arguments that it's better not, that sometimes it is better to have a few pen names because it can actually help you in sales and not confusing your reader, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting conversation. And I think there's a difference, too, if you're talking about taking a pen name and using that versus using multiple pen names. Those can be two very different things as well. And different situations. Like I know writers who write erotica, and I don't think they're necessarily ashamed or think that their book is low quality. I think they're somewhat afraid of being judged for that, and not because of the writing, but just because of the topic.
I'm saying, like, let's say Letterman called them up and their book did really well. Would they go on Letterman and go, "Okay, my name is this, and I wrote this book"?
Yeah, I don't know.
And if they are just afraid of what people are going to think, I mean, who cares what people think? If you wrote a good book, even if it's erotica, stand behind it, right?
Right, yeah.
I mean, at least that's how I feel. Like, if I was going to write a book like that, at least, you know, why be afraid of what people are going to think? But
yeah.
But that's also the reason why you use a pen name, right? Because you don't want people connecting it to you.
Yeah.
You know, and if they're going to... It's like I have no problem with cursing, but I wouldn't go to a job interview and start cursing because I understand that while I'm not offended by it and while I don't see anything wrong with it, that person might, and therefore it's a bad idea to do that, right?
Yeah.
Is that way off topic or am I kind of...
No, I agree with you. I also think, though, it's like reading erotica is a choice. You know,
especially Jay Thorne erotica.
Yeah, I mean,
you got to be really desperate.
Yeah, you got to be really horny to read my stuff.
You got to be the type of person that could just get excited by just about anything, really.
but that same like idea applies for horror, and I don't get people can leave whatever reviews they want and whatever. But like when I see a review that says like this book was gory and violent and I hated it, and like in the top of the product description is this big disclaimer, like I kind of want to say like, well, why'd you buy it then? Like, or, you know, why'd you read it? Why'd you continue to read it? And then why did you review it? And I think you could say the same thing for erotica. Like if you don't like erotica, don't read it, but don't bash it either if you don't read it.
No, and most of a lot of those, you know, I don't think they have a really a problem with reviewers. I mean, the people, like you said, who read it, that's what they want. They're not going to read it and go, "Oh my God, this had too much graphic sex in it." You know, it's like it's like when I get some of those in my zombie stuff. They're like, "It's too gory." I'm like, "What zombie books have you been reading? Like the really tame ones where there's no gore?" Yeah. And mine isn't even that gory. That's the thing. It's surprising. Yeah. I mean, you read part of it, didn't you?
I read Dead Highways 1. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not that gory.
No, it's not.
Compared to like a lot of zombie or horror stuff, but I get that, you know, and you can't control it. I know we'll probably do a whole show on reviews because that's a whole nother topic.
That's a whole nother topic, yeah.
But I've definitely been, you know, thinking about it with this new thriller that Joe Hart inspired. And I got a good, I actually found a cover that I like, so.
Cool.
So I'm kind of in that branding where, you know, section where I'm thinking about what to do with it, but
yeah.
And
yeah.
So this, and seeing you release that children's book definitely made me think about, you know, what I should do and what other people tell me, you know.
Well, and honestly, like I've said this in a number of places, a number of times, like that might not be the right call, and if it turns out to be the wrong one, I'll just change it. But like, I'm not going to know until I try. So I'm just going to give it a try, and if it backfires on me, then I'll make the change. But I'm going to give it a shot and see what happens.
Yeah, my wife actually, I don't think I've mentioned this, maybe, but me and her, we're doing a children's book. It's like a old book that she had, you know, put together a long time ago, and she does all the art. And she had wrote the story back then, but I rewrote it and like made it all rhyme and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And it's really just kind of a silly children's book, really for probably like young children. It would be like something a parent would read to their kid when they're like four or something. And, you know, do I put my name on that? I don't know, you know? Maybe I'll just publish it as her and don't connect myself to it, but...
Yeah.
So that's one where I'll have to consider that. Luckily for me, she's going so slow with the pictures that it'd probably be a while before I have to, but... But with this thriller, I mean, I hope to be able to get it done in 2 or 3 months, maybe. So it's coming up.
Yeah.
So
cool. That's exciting.
I'm sure I'll mention it, you know, once I figure out what I'm gonna do. But yeah. But it might be Rich. If it's not Richard Brown, it might be Rich Brown. I don't know. Cool. And then I will connect it and tell my audience. But I'm gonna ask some other people and maybe ask some other authors what they think and just get some different opinions. You know, before I make kind of a final decision.
Yeah. Well, it's never a final decision either, though. I mean, you can always change it.
Right, but with this book, it's like I already changed it once. I'm kind of like, I want to do it right this time, you know? It's like I already released it as something else. So that's why I'm so like, what do I do? Because I don't want to rebrand it and publish it and then unpublish it again and then go through it, you know? I really want to do it right this time and give it the best shot that it can have. If it fails, then fine, you know, whatever. I know the story will be better, but... it'll be something I'm proud of. I don't think I want to unpublish it, at least as far as the story is concerned. But I don't know that it would make any. That's the thing. I don't know it would make any difference if I release it as Rich Brown. I mean, I think it'll sell. It won't really sell any worse or better either way.
Yeah.
So probably the only advantage is it's a shorter name and I can make it bigger on the title or something. But I mean, on the book cover. But
yeah. Yeah. All right. What do you say we wrap it up? We're almost at an hour here.
Yeah, anything, any final words?
Just another plug for the Pet Sematary Show. Get your copy, the older the better.
Yeah, get the old one. I'm sure there got to be some on eBay or something.
Yeah, whatever you can find. We're gonna dedicate a whole show to it, probably sometime in November, later in November. Be great to have people send us in some questions and comments. That's going to be a fun show. We have... some guests lined up. We've got a Halloween show coming. We've got a special
episode
in the works.
What are you going to dress up as?
I'm going to dress up as Rich Brown.
A princess?
Rich Brown.
It's your little tiara? Yeah, Rich Brown. It's still going to... You got to look just like me, though. You got to have the hat and the sunglasses.
Exactly, but I'll be Rich Brown on my lower third.
I'll be Jay Thorne, then. That'll be our costumes.
All right.
You got to make really bad jokes, and I can just look pretty.
Okay. We'll try that.
Also, for anybody, today's the 13th, this episode's going out, we also have like a special Walking Dead episode. We thought it would be, you know, be wrong not to do a Walking Dead episode. And with the season just coming out, we're going to, you know, just share our thoughts on it, and it should be going up. You know, it should be up either, you know, today if you're on the 13th as well.
There you go. Walking Dead special episode. So looking forward to that. Don't forget, we need your validation and your support and your adulation. And we've got very fragile egos, so make sure that you... Yeah, he forgot about that all episode. So make sure you leave us a review on iTunes or comment on YouTube. Like us, tweet us, love us.
Subscribe.
Subscribe, all that stuff.
Yeah, we're getting some comments now. That's nice.
Yeah. Keep them coming. Anytime you want to... Richard, I'll be happy to step up and pile on, so you can do that too.
Anytime you what?
Want to hurl insults at you.
Oh. Well, I hit you a lot, so it's only fair that... I mean, I actually read a page out of your book. you know, so.
Yeah, well, I don't care. Why would
you
I
weren't
care?
Expecting that.
No, but I don't care. You gotta, yeah, next, you gotta do a whole lot more than that to get to rattle my cage, buddy.
I'm gonna keep going.
You go ahead.
Every episode is gonna be a little bit more.
You go for it, man. I'll take everything you can throw at me.
Yeah, next week we should have Joanna Penn.
Yes.
So definitely on the 20th, I believe.
Now, I don't know if we're getting Joanna Penn or JF Penn, but we can ask her when she shows up.
We're getting probably both, but.
Both. Okay.
It's like, are we gonna get Rich Brown or Richard Brown? We don't know who's gonna show up, but it'll be one of them at least.
All right. Well, we're out of here. We'll see you next episode. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to love us. We love you. See you later.
Love you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Horror Writers Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Do it. Do it now. What are you waiting for? Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter.